Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
Hey guys, so we just are coming to you from the future.
Ooh.
Before we come to you from the past.
Oh, that's trippy.
Mm-hmm. Because this is a rebroadcast. If you've been listening for a while, you will know that we put this episode out like years ago.
Yes, we did.
And this week we are taking a little break because my kitties are on spring break.
Not your kitties, your kiddies.
Correct. Okay. I don't know what the kitties are doing. You know what I mean? None of my business. True. So they're on spring break. So we are rebroadcasting our Salinas episode.
And when this comes out, I mean, it's going to be almost when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You It'll know, be the anniversary.
Yeah, the anniversary. So she was murdered on March 31st, 1995. And this is coming out last week of March. Also, there is a little bit of an update since we recorded this episode. So Yolanda Saldivar, which is Selena's killer, according to an article from New York Post, is going to be up for parole in March of 2025. So that's next year. And Yolanda says, and I quote, enough is enough. This is Yolanda's relative that says this. She feels like she's a political prisoner at this point. She's ready to get out of jail because she believes she has more than served her time. She now says that the shooting was accidental. She had meant to kill herself, which she did say
she wanted to die
here and there. Yeah. She now claims, though, that she never embezzled any money. She says that she wrote and signed checks to herself. Sure. But she did that at Selena's request to purchase plane tickets for Selena to visit a plastic surgeon in Mexico because Selena was having an affair with this person.
The gall. It's the gall for me.
Where in the prison commissary can you buy audacity?
Exactly.
Because she's getting that in bulk at this point.
Right.
She also filed complaints with the jail, even a federal lawsuit in 2017, claiming that her living conditions were unsafe and dangerous after she injured herself by falling off the top bunk.
Oh,
I mean, Tori injured herself falling off the top bunk every single night when we had bunk beds. You didn't sue Dad.
I 100% didn't sue Dad. I should have.
Your dumb ass just kept missing the step.
I really did. And it's also very, very unsafe to climb up a ladder with just socks on. That's just a slippery situation.
Well, it sure is. So apparently she plans to cite her safety fears as one of her justifications for release when she's up for parole next year. It does say here that she has no blemishes on her record that would keep the board from holding a parole hearing. She can formally request a hearing up to 90 days prior to her eligibility date. Her relative says, quote, she knows it's an uphill battle, but she's hoping that the parole board will have a heart and will parole her. She thinks she deserves it.
Hmm. So, well, I guess we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens, obviously, but
mm-hmm. It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Exactly.
And yeah, so just know that wasn't out at the time that we recorded this.
So if that helps to fuel your hate fire and then you want to go ahead and re-listen or listen to the first time, the episode, enjoy.
Enjoy. We love you guys.
Love you.
Patreon peeps.
What's up?
I'm not gonna do
no.
it. No. But you started to try.
I started to. I seriously considered it. I'm so sorry.
I kind of, and by kind of, I mean all the way, wish that you would have committed to it and just done it.
Man, it would have been so bad. You would have been like, excuse me, don't do that again. Right? Okay. So today we're going to do Salinas.
Our Lord and Savior, Selena Quintanilla Perez.
Yes. You know, it's like a 90s thing. I got to just really thinking about the 90s the other day, and I thought, Salinas.
Mm-hmm. Anything for Salinas.
Yeah, we love that movie. So we're going to stupid quote it.
Get oh, ready. For sure. Yeah, definitely.
All right, here we go. Let's launch right into it.
I didn't say it.
Now I feel like I have to every time. Selena was born on April 16th, 1971 in Lake Jackson, Texas. And that is 2 days and 15 years before my birthday. But very close.
So way now, to tie it together with yourself, though.
Yeah, but it's Allie's birthday.
Oh.
No, hers is 17th. Never mind. Never mind. Anyway. So she was born to Abraham and Marcella Quintanilla. Oh, also, I can say that word, but I'm going to fuck up some of the Spanish words. So sorry.
Definitely. So that's a given.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. The youngest of three children. She had two older siblings, a brother and a sister, A.B.
And Suzette.
Suzette. Yes. I know you should probably tell this part. Selena began singing when she was about 6 years old. Her father noticed that she was talented even then. He said her timing, her pitch were perfect. I could see it from day one.
Because Abraham was in like a doo-wop-y, like
he was in barber the pecan sandies.
Yes, he was in a barbershop quartet, but it was just three of them, I think. And they were...
So he was in a triet?
A triet, yes. And he would go around and he would try to perform, but people at that point, because that was in the 50s, they wanted, if they were Hispanic, they didn't want them to play at the places where they were, people wanted to hear the music that they were playing. So the only places they could get gigs were in Hispanic, like Latino bars, and they didn't play that kind of music.
Mm. Oh, right, so, right, right. Yeah. Man, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
So they would start singing, "You're mine and we belong together." And they would sing it, and people were throwing beer bottles at the chicken wire cage, Blues Brothers style.
Not very nice.
It was not nice. They did not know. I hope all these
people
rawhide
realize later on that he was Selena's father, and then they're like, "Oh shit, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed of myself." You should be ashamed of yourself, no matter who it is. But
yes.
Anyway,
yes.
So during this time, Abraham had quit his job as a shipping clerk at Dow Chemicals to open a Tex-Mex restaurant called Papagayo's. His children began performing together at the restaurant, Selena singing, A.B. on bass, and Suzette on drums.
And apparently they hated it. Like, they did not want to play.
I felt like you were going to add something, so I figured
I noticed, yeah. You just sensed it coming off of me. Yeah, they were super pissed because they just wanted to go outside and play. And Abraham was like, "Listen, you practice for 6 hours, and then you can go outside and play." No, I don't think it wasn't that intense, but still.
Yeah, but he wanted him. I mean,
you only get good if you practice.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, like, they missed out a lot on childhood and, like, definitely their teenage years and stuff. And some of her teachers in school said they wanted to, like, file complaints and stuff because she would come in to school, like, exhausted because she was up so late doing gigs and stuff. I mean, music was... ended up being her thing, obviously, but yeah, it definitely took a toll.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, KQ listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic it needs no introduction. We all put our hair through the wringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, aging, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll, and that's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of damage, but also shield your locks from future harm. Enter Lola V, clean, plant-powered products for every hair type and texture. And here's a treat for you, our awesome listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at lolav.com. Just use code QUEENS at checkout. I mean, if you're taking hair care advice, why listen to anyone besides the woman who gave us the Rachel? Okay, I'm here to tell you that I do not like washing my hair. I despise it, actually. But when I got Lola V, I started washing my hair every other day, and that is unheard of for me. The scent is amazing, and my hair has never felt or smelled this good. All right, so here's some more about Lola V. First, let's talk ingredients. Lola V is all about naturally derived plant-based goodness. No silicones, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan. The in-shower trio of the restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment turn your shower experience into a spa-like retreat while working to banish breakage. Post-shower, the glossing detangler, perfect leave-in, and lightweight hair oil are a triple threat for your styling routine. These multifunctional formulas work beautifully together to prime, prep, and finish for silkier, shinier Jennifer Aniston-approved hair. Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at lolav.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code QUEENS at checkout. That's 15% off your order at lolav.com with promo code QUEENS. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Again, as our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code QUEENS at checkout. That's 15% off your order at lolav.com with promo code QUEENS. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask where you've heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
So the restaurant business, unfortunately, was short-lived. It closed the following year due to a recession caused by the Texas oil bust. The Quintanillas filed bankruptcy and were evicted from their home. They ended up moving to Corpus Christi, Texas, where they settled. And Abraham, recognizing the potential in his family's music abilities, made music the family business. So he decided to just go all in on the music deal. So Abraham became their manager and Selena Ilostinos played
nailed it.
Weddings, fairs, festivals, and even street corners to make ends meet.
I feel like it should be known that Torella took French in high school. Mm. She did not take Spanish.
And God rest her soul, Miss Manley. I can't even. Southern. I couldn't even say I took French. I
don't, right.
She was took like the most, La Tarte. Like that was her French. I'm like, I don't think we're supposed to say it that way.
The redneckiest.
Yeah,
it was, French it was you've redneck ever heard. French.
Yeah. Selena was about 9 years old when they went on the road to find work, and that's when Abraham got the bus. And he remodeled it or refurbished it or whatever and named it Big Bertha. And I feel like if the walls of Big Bertha could talk, like, would it have some stories? They spent like their whole lives on the bus.
Oh, definitely.
Everything. So by the time she was in the eighth grade, she ended up withdrawing from school because she was traveling so much that she was basically never at school. So she ended up enrolling in correspondence courses to continue her education. And she ended up getting a high school equivalency diploma. So she at least did finish her education. And she was accepted to Louisiana State University and Pacific Western University. And that's where she enrolled and declared business administration as her major.
Huh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either. And obviously it paid off for her. Because she had several businesses.
She did. So Selena Ilostinos recorded nearly a dozen albums for a local record label and began gaining popularity in the Tejano music community. Am I saying that word right?
You sure are.
Okay. In 1987, she was named the Tejano Music Awards Female Vocalist of the Year. And then she received that title again for 9 consecutive years following that.
Wow.
Yeah. Abraham believed that she should focus on music that paid homage to her heritage, but she wanted to record English-speaking tracks because she could barely speak Spanish. So she started taking Spanish lessons from her father as she recorded more Tejano albums. And they said at first she was learning Spanish phonetically. Because like her brother could speak Spanish. He wrote their songs in Spanish. And then she just basically learned how to say the words. Mm-hmm. She didn't know what they meant. And then later she learned Spanish to try to speak it, I guess. Because mm-hmm. then he wanted her to go on. I mean, he booked her like radio appearances and stuff, interviews, and they were Spanish speaking. So she had to...
Well, and she did I don't know how big it was, but she did a show in Mexico City. And you cannot speak. Like, there's no way we can do this. And she was like, no, I can do this. And she was like trying to convince him that she could. But he was like, you don't know Spanish. And I think that's kind of kicked her in the booty. Like,
they're going to know mm-hmm. if you're not speaking it right.
The jig is up. Yeah.
Yeah. Tejano is also referred to as Tex-Mex music and is described as a male-dominated Spanish language genre with elements of polka, jazz, and country music. I feel like that's, I don't know, I guess. I don't feel polka, but I mean, I guess I can see a little bit where they're coming from.
I've definitely heard, because in my neighborhood, there's a lot of Hispanic families. And I love walking the dogs because I hear that music on a pretty day. Like, I hear it a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And
it
is amazing. But I can understand where they're coming from, where it's like maybe the brass section or like with the accordions and stuff. And
That's true. That's true. I could see that. Selena dreamed of becoming a crossover artist one day, transitioning from Tejano to English speaking pop music. After performing at the Tejano Music Awards in 1989, her dream started to become a reality. She was signed by EMI Latin, which is a record company, and was able to record studio albums with the potential for a crossover album in the future. And at first, they told her she needed to get more fans, basically. They denied her first couple of requests for the crossover album because they said she didn't have enough of a fan base. It was all in the like Latin community that it wouldn't.
I feel like that's the equivalent of like having views on YouTube or social media.
Yeah.
Connecting.
Also, I think her being a female played a big part of that because
The Tejano music was...
It was all male driven. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, some record company, like the smaller record companies that were like, just in the Latin music community didn't want to pick her up.
And that was in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
Like things were different back then.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, there was like Madonna and...
But that's in the English... I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a tiny... It's. I mean, not that it's not big, but it's not as commercialized not as universally...
Yeah, it was a very specific genre.
Yeah.
So... In 1992, she married her guitar player, Chris Perez. For most of the relationship, they had been secretive, fearing her father would put an end to the love affair.
And if you've seen the movie, you know what happened there.
Yeah.
He gets so growly, but like in the movie anyway.
Right.
You know, he's so like explosive, but he's like, it's over. Like he's so like, I would be intimidated by that man.
Oh, yeah. Definitely the way they portrayed him. He's an intimidating person for sure.
But it did seem like Chris had his, because he was kind of a wild card, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he had a ponytail.
Sure he did.
And that was scary.
And he played electric guitar and it was like...
Yeah, he was a rocker.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure if he was in, because I've been watching a shit ton of Beverly Hills 90210. And when he would walk into the scene, if he was in the show... That's when the guitar...
Like,
you know that's an unsavory character if that guitar comes in.
Made aware.
Yes.
Yeah. So when he started working for Selena, he actually had a girlfriend in San Antonio.
Scandalous.
I know. But... And he tried to like not have feelings for Selena. Like he was like, well... He tried to distance himself from her. He tried not to be alone with her. And all kinds of stuff.
That's admirable. He tried.
But he was like, can't do it. So,
well, I mean, no offense to his girlfriend at the time, but Can you deny Selena?
Yeah. I know.
She's an angel.
Fucking gorgeous.
I know. So eventually he was like, I broke up with my girlfriend. Couldn't do it. And, you know, that's admirable. He broke up with his girlfriend first. So then at Pizza Hut, he told Selena he loved her.
Is that the part where... everything about this is like going back to the movie for me because that's like our fucking childhood. And when she's like, I love pizza. I can eat a whole medium pizza by myself. And he puts a whole lot of hot sauce on it. And she's like, that's too much. And he's like, no, I love hot sauce. And then he takes one bite and he coughs. Yeah. And he's like, and she's like, do you want to try some of mine? And he's like, what's on it? And she's like, pepperoni. And he was like, no, that's too hot for me.
Yeah. Such a funny movie.
It's so good.
Yeah. So, yep. That was it. That was when they said they love each other at the Pizza Hut.
We've had some really good times at Pizza Hut, honestly.
Oh, my God.
Over a personal pan.
Hell yeah.
Get out of here. And getting all of the quarters from your parents to go play like Toni Braxton on the jukebox.
Yeah.
Stop. Yeah. Getting bouncy balls.
I know. It's so fun now, too, like having a kid because Ben always... He calls Toots spicy. That's just what he calls it. And he's like, can we go to Spicy? Because they have all the games that you can play. And
he does
so
love that.
With the quarters. Yeah. Oh, and he's like, Mom, do you have any quarters? We can go to Spicy for dinner. I'm like, no. But he loves it. He's like, let's play a game. Hey, you guys. It's us again.
Yay. It's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking, like, WTF. Where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us. Just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so... here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG. So that's when they told each other they loved each other.
Really sweet.
And her dad was like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. You are not to see each other anymore. He ended up firing Chris from the band. He was like, this guy's got to go. Mm-hmm. And he said that, well, Selena argued with him about it and tried to explain to him that like, but daddy, I love him. Like,
oh, Little Mermaid.
Yeah. And he was like, yeah, I don't care. So... he said that he was worried that Chris was a machista,
which is
a Spanish word for a male chauvinist. And I remember that word from one of the I'm a Killer episodes. That crazy Ryan, forget his last name, guy. It's like the one guy was on death row for being part of them breaking into the house and killing the people. But this guy's the one that actually did it. And he only got like 40 years because he admitted to doing it. And he's the one that did it. And the guy who got life was like puking in the backyard the whole time. No, this guy, when he was talking about it, he's like, I come from a machista culture. A dare is a dare.
Yes. I remember
this. You tell me what. Yeah, that guy. So I remember that word and I was like, oh, because they didn't explain what that meant.
It's a male chauvinist.
That's what they said.
But what is that? I don't get it.
I don't see how that, I don't know. And maybe the online is not defining it correctly. I don't know. Anybody who speaks Spanish
or is familiar with the machista
culture, let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they said that what Abraham was worried about is that he would take over Selena, force her to stop.
Like not be okay
working.
With her being such a strong
right
female, like
yeah,
breadwinner.
He would take all that freedom away.
So that
he would
makes
make her
sense.
Quit her music career.
I don't see Chris that way, but it makes sense why the use of that term in this, I was not understanding.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
I feel like in the movie, though, they kind of made it more like
He was a bad boy.
Well, that he was a bad boy, but I think that he, I think Abraham in the movie also felt like he was chasing Selena for money.
That he was
just going to like latch on to.
And they kind of alluded to, they, I mean, because, you know, it only makes sense for a lot of people when you get settled down, you get married, you want to start a family. And if you are this rising star and you have somewhere to go with that, and then all of a sudden everything gets put on hold because you want to have a baby or, and that's, right. There's nothing wrong with that, but maybe that was some of the fear as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she definitely would have wanted babies.
Can you imagine those beautiful babies?
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. I am so obsessed with Selena, like in the best way possible. I just love her and her sweet little smile. And she was like such a bright light. And I love her so much. And her music was so beautiful.
Yeah.
She had the best voice. I cannot say enough good things about her. And Chris is a precious angel from heaven too.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Like hearing him talk about her in interviews and stuff, it's just, oh God, I was like at Starbucks watching interviews, like tearing up. And I'm like, just nobody, just don't worry about it, guys.
And I'm pretty sure he's married now, like remarried.
Oh yeah.
But I think that he would be probably one of those people though, that if he was interviewed now about it, he would probably still tear up because that was real love.
He wrote a book about her or about their relationship, like, I mean, not too long ago. So, and that would be hard for his new wife, I think, too, because it's like, he still loves her. He's always going to love her.
It's not like they stopped being together because it didn't work out.
Right, yeah.
She was taken away from him.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, in any situation like that where a spouse dies, you know, from an illness or whatever it is, it's like, that's got to be so hard.
For sure.
To move on and like...
And to live up to that, being the new wife.
Yeah, because anytime, people pass away, I mean, usually then they're like, they become this like... Because you only want to remember the good things about
them. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard.
So one thing that my husband and I do, and it's a direct quote of Torella, when we were teeny tiny little babies, I was a teeny little baby, like 1-year-old. Torella was 2.5. And she was so upset because dad's in the yard, Miss KB, and he's like super far away. And she's so dramatic. And she's like crying her eyes out. And everybody's like, come here, come here. Cause she's chasing after him. And she's like, I wanna hold him. And anytime Steven and I have like a precious angel in our lives, we're always like, I wanna hold him. And I wanna hold Chris. I wanna hold him.
I don't know which quote you were gonna go with. I was
there's
like,
a lot of them.
This
there's
could be
a lot
bad.
Of them.
So he fired Chris from the band and was like, you got to go, get out of here. And he referred to Chris as a cancer in his family.
Oh my gosh.
He threatened to disband the group if they didn't end their relationship.
So That's serious.
Yeah. I mean, he was fucking pissed about it. And I think...
He's got a Latin temper.
Abraham, I think, was also pretty... I don't know if controlling is the right word, but...
It's hard though sometimes for daddies and daughters because they want to be the biggest male relationship in their lives.
And he also was her boss, basically.
Yes.
So...
And if she doesn't make money, then he doesn't make money. I'm not saying he was all about money.
And it's hard to like... Because normally, as a family, you're not looking at each other as a business transaction, like two, you know what I mean? So like, because of this podcast, I only see dollar signs when I look at Tori, but
obviously,
normally...
It's obvious. Well, because I'm the talent and without me, you're nothing.
Right, right, right.
Ooh.
Catch me on Snapped next week.
The look she gave me.
But like... So totally just kidding about that. But but like, you know, if you're a dad and okay, maybe you don't want your daughter to date this guy because you think he's a bad boy or whatever, you're worried about her. But furthermore, then he's got, when he's talking to her about stuff, he's also got to think steps ahead in like her career. And like you said, if she settles down, is she not going to want to sing anymore? Or is she not going to focus on what she needs to be focusing on? Like, he doesn't want her to have distractions that are going to take her away from the band.
And this was
all that
such
kind of stuff.
A big time for her. This was a pivotal moment for her where she was literally exploding.
Yeah. Although I do think it helped that he was in the band. So like,
right.
It's not like she'd want to stop touring or whatever because he's with her.
Yeah, it's
so
not like
that
he was
help.
A fucking... PCA.
Yeah. And maybe he just didn't want her, like, he didn't want to lose the little girl.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Because it's the daddy-daughter thing.
Yeah.
That it's, I cannot imagine, but it's got to be hard.
Yeah.
to...
Because dad always used to tell us, like, we couldn't date till we were 35 or whatever.
And I've still maintained that if things don't work out with Steven, that I'm going to marry dad. Not in a weird way, but you haven't seen Miss KB. She's got great legs.
They have seen Miss KB. I posted the birthday.
But you haven't seen the legs.
No, you haven't.
Great legs.
Great legs.
Just kidding. I'm not trying to be weird. I'm just trying to be funny.
Yeah. But it's like, I mean, it's a blessing when you like wish you could marry somebody like your dad, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, maybe he just didn't want to like, maybe he just wasn't ready. I mean, he didn't like her wearing bustiers.
That's true. We quoted it just earlier today. We went to Chewy's for lunch and Torella was like, Selena would have wanted us to go there because it's Tex-Mex, you know? And
we tried to wear bustiers, but we couldn't find any.
No. And Torella said about the bustiers, and then it brought back, of course, the movie where Abraham's like, you can wear it. Just keep your jacket on. Like, you could wear, what is it called? The bustier la caca. Just a bustier. Because that's such a dad thing to do, too. Like, if you like something and they're like, I'm just going to fucking trash this name, the name of it. I'm just going to pretend like I don't know what the hell she's talking about. Yeah.
Sorry, Chester. It's Chandler. Whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, though? Because, I mean, I don't know how things went for the rest of the family. Abraham's so mad. Is Suzette dating? Does anyone care about if she's got a boyfriend?
I know. What about AB? Does he have a girlfriend? Is he getting married?
Like, everybody's like, not Selena. But like, Suzette's like, okay, cool. I'll just go over here and I'll fuck myself. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Abraham or AB's like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Who cares about
just
us?
Just spit in my face. It's cool.
What are we, chopped liver?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chopped chorizo, Torella.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, so after that, then Chris and Selena were like, fine, we'll break up Abraham. And then they were like, just kidding. We had our fingers crossed. So they were just like sneaking around by themselves or like behind everybody's back, whatever. They were sneaking around. And then Selena was like, holy shit, I have a great idea. What if we got married, but we didn't tell anybody? But if we got married, then dad would have to accept it because we would be married and he would see that we love each other and it would be totally fine. Then we wouldn't have to hide anymore. And then we could just be together forever and it would be great. So they eloped and got married on April 2nd, 1992. And before Abraham could be notified by Selena and Chris, the media got a hold of that shit and he
found
out
the radio
the wrong way. And it did not go over well. Abraham was fucking pissed.
But he settled down.
He did. He like sequestered himself for a little while. He
probably for the best.
Went into seclusion.
He needed to.
Yeah. And then he said, you know what? I accept this. So he eventually apologized and he decided that it would just be okay. And he realized that Chris loved his daughter and that she loved him. And they got an apartment together and they were living together and he let Chris back in the band and now everything's okay. So
it's just so funny to me because I understand it, but at the same time, it's just like all of that could have just been not even an issue.
Right.
Like, from where they started to where they ended up, it's like, did we need all of this like tension and turmoil? Like, it's just so funny because Abraham, God love him, stubborn as a fucking mule. Like,
for sure.
Having any of it.
Yeah, he just wouldn't, like, I think in one part of my notes, I wrote, Abraham just does not budge. Like, that's just, when he decides something, he digs his heels in. It's just, he's kind of a, it's my way or the highway kind of guy. And
I think he meant well and wanted the best for everybody, but it's like,
for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, look at where we are now. It's okay.
And I feel like Marcella is probably like the mom on My Big Fat Greek Wedding where she's just like tries to be supportive of him, but she's like...
Well, I'm sure, she wants him to think that he's the head of the household.
Exactly.
You have to baby that sometimes and just, okay, well, you're the head, but the woman's the neck and she can turn him any way she wants.
Yeah, because she always approved of the relationship. She didn't care. It wasn't...
Well, Selena was like coming to her and confiding in her and being like, please don't tell dad.
Yeah.
She's like, I was a teenage girl once too. That's fine. Like, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, they were close and it was really sweet.
And I'm basing all of my information on what Terrell is telling me, but also the movie. So And movies are true life.
Always true.
Yes.
So in 1993, Selena released the album Live, which was recorded during a free concert. And she ended up winning a Grammy in 1994 for Best Mexican-American Album for that. So,
I wonder if that was the one in the Astrodome in Texas.
Yeah, she sold out like 60,000 seats.
With her purple, with
yeah.
the...
Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah.
In 1994, she released an album called, well, it translates to Forbidden Love. I just can't even. I guess Amor is in there. But I can't. I'm not going to fuck it up so bad. I didn't even put it in there. That's how much I'm not even going to try.
She did not even try.
So it became the best-selling Latin album in the U.S., putting Tejano music on the map in the U.S. So... they said that, you know, like we were saying, it's not like it was the smallest music genre by any means, but they said it wasn't exactly marketable before that. And so there's a market for it because it's getting more widely known. So, you know, I hope all of those Tejano men realize that they were a bunch of machistas.
Yeah.
Because
women can do bad all by themselves.
Thank you. So yeah, a lady did this.
Yeah. I just feel like, I mean, not that I've ever, when we grew up, we had specific types of music that we were exposed to. But Selena brought a whole different genre into it for us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, for sure.
Really opened the door for that. And I feel like because we have some Cajun background and Tejano music kind of goes with that, with the accordions and the fiddles.
Yeah, there's some similar elements. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I thank Selena for doing that for me. What's the word?
Grateful?
Well, no, it's like I give that to her.
Credit her?
Credit.
Okay.
That's probably what I mean.
Attribute that to her.
Sure, okay. Sure. All the above.
Yeah, okay. So her dreams of becoming a crossover star were finally becoming a reality. And she worked her ass off for it. It wasn't like, oh, we signed a record deal. Like, she fucking worked her ass. They all did.
Totally.
She recorded the songs for her album Dreaming of You in late 1994. Unfortunately, she would not live to see the success of that album, which included the popular crossover track I Could Fall in Love, which was released posthumously in 1995. I did not realize that she was not alive when that song like actually got released.
I didn't either.
I thought that happened before.
It makes sense though, because in the movie, there was never like a video for it. It was just the splicing together of other videos of her. It. So I guess that makes a lot of sense now. But looking back, I didn't realize.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Because she recorded most of those. It was like December 94 to March of 95. So that's when she recorded everything.
Pretty quick for that, for an entire album.
Yeah, for sure. So now we can back up because we haven't mentioned Yolanda at all. Mm-mm. So now we're up to 95. But while all of those things are happening, Yolanda Saldivar enters the lives of the Quintanilla family in 1991. So we're going back a few years. But at that time, she was a registered nurse from San Antonio, and she was working in nearby hospitals. And she was doing well as a nurse, people said. She was making pretty good money. But she had attended a Selena concert and became enamored with her. She started approaching Abraham in 91 to start a fan club, and he really brushed it off. She had called Abraham, he said about 12 times over the span of just a couple months, asking him over and over and over. She wanted to start the fan club. She thought it could be, you know, really successful.
And I think if you left it there, she's right. Like, she would have been a good person to have brought in because she had good ideas with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And she grew it really quickly. I mean, she did well and she recognized, I mean, at that time, you know, fan clubs were a thing. Like, now that's
not.
You can follow them on Instagram or whatever. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, back then you had to write in and you had to get your fan club letter and
yeah, you had to pay a membership. Yes. And you know, you got
pen pals, things like that.
Yeah, you got like a keychain or whatever. But he finally relented and was like, okay, fine, you can start the fan club. So she was about 30 years old then. Report said that she lived alone, but then I also read a report that said that she didn't have any kids of her own and she wasn't married, but she had custody of her brother's kids and he had 3 kids and apparently he abandoned his kids and she had custody of them. So I don't know if they were just like older at this time or something, because there's no mention of them anywhere. It's not like, okay, this woman has murdered somebody and now she's in jail, and you would think there would be something about like
where the kids
we've got to find. Yeah. Or the kids are going to go into foster care or something, like,
right.
So I wonder if they were just older. I don't know. Or maybe she just didn't have custody of them anymore, but there's not much on that at all. She's reported to have lived alone and she lived in San Antonio at the time. So when she began her relationship with Selena, it was by becoming the president of the official Selena fan club, and it was unpaid. She just did it because she wanted to, but it also gave her, she didn't make any money doing it. She still had her job, but she got access to Selena and parties, and Selena bought her lots of expensive gifts, and she just got this access that she couldn't have otherwise had. And she had some access financially too, because she managed the membership fees and all that kind of stuff. So she was the person who was supposed to make sure that things got delivered to the people. So they were supposed to get a t-shirt and like cassettes and stuff. So,
but she also kind of moved in and helped her with the boutique too.
She did. That was a few years after that. Mm-hmm. So in 91, all this started. And they said that like Yolanda loved Spotted Cow. She had a thing for Spotted Cows. And so like if Selena was on a trip or whatever and she saw something that she thought Yolanda would like, she would buy it for her. And at one time she bought her this huge rug that had a Spotted Cow on it. It was like $1,000. Like it wasn't like she was getting her like $30 gifts. She was spending a lot of money on her. So the membership to the club was $22 and she ended up growing the fan club to over 5,000 members really quickly. And I think what you're talking about where she was like thanking her in that interview or whatever. I mean, Selena like raved about her, was just like, she's amazing at what she does. She's, you know, she's great with the fan club and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and it's from the movie anyway, like they really painted, and I believe it, that Selena was super, super grateful for everybody that worked for her. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
For that, she thanked them by treating them so well.
Like, yeah, definitely.
Doting on them and yeah, showering them with gifts. And
she wasn't the kind of person who like, I mean, by the time that she passed away, she was a millionaire, but she still lived. Like they said, all of them except for Suzette, like Suzette lived kind of on her own or whatever, but they all still lived in like adjoining properties or whatever. And they were not, they didn't live in an upscale neighborhood or homes or anything like that.
They lived super modestly.
Yeah. They've stayed where they were. You know, she wasn't one to like go out and get a mansion or whatever. She did have a little red Porsche that she drove. And that was like her one thing that she gave herself, like that's indulged in.
So Selena though.
I know. But, you know, I think she managed her money well, and she wasn't one of those kind of people that was like, okay, well now I'm famous or I'm getting famous, so I have to have only red M&Ms and people have to get me white lilies and like whatever. She's just like, I'm going to still eat the same food that I'm going to eat. Like
she stayed super grounded.
Yeah, she totally did. So, and she, like you said, she took care of the people around her. Like she wanted to share that because I think she viewed everybody as a part of her success. So she wanted to share that with them. And that's pretty unique, I think.
That says a lot about their family.
Yeah, absolutely. So from 1991 to 1995, Selena and Yolanda became close friends. I don't understand this friendship personally. I feel like Selena could do a lot better, but she was also really like, she saw the best in people, I think. But at one point, Selena brought Yolanda on a trip with her. I don't know if it was like a tour, a show or whatever. She brought Yolanda with her.
And they got really close on that trip. They were like girlfriend gabbing all night, I guess, and like whatever. But then after that, Selena was like, why don't, if you want to, I'll hire you to be my personal assistant. And so Yolanda was like, done. So she quit her job and then moved to Corpus Christi to be closer to the business and everything. So like some people say that her quitting her job to be closer to Selena just shows that she was super obsessed. But I mean, she was offered a paid job with her idol. So
what would you do?
Like everybody, I think would take that. I think she wanted that job because she was obsessed, you know, like I think they go hand in hand, but I don't see that as creepy. Like she was offered a job and she took it. I bet it paid a hell of a lot more than what she was making.
But I feel like, I mean, I can understand because with Selena, the way, from what I gather anyway, Selena was probably so sweet and so genuine and thoughtful and just wanted to make everybody feel included. And so she probably really reached out to everyone, but Yolanda probably was like, oh my God, we're like BFF. Like,
yeah.
She took it the wrong way, maybe, or really blew it out of proportion.
People also called Yolanda a loner. Like, she didn't really have any friends other than Selena. And she was, that friendship, I think, basically was everything to her.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, she enjoyed the perks of that relationship a little too much. They went to her head. But I think that she was enamored with her. She got close to her. I mean, that's unusual, you know, to be like, oh my gosh, I went to this show. Like, to get in when she did before Selena blew up as much as she did. I mean, how many letters did I write to Justin Timberlake?
You're still writing them.
I have never met this man.
Yep.
How in the fuck are we supposed to get married?
Oh, no.
I mean, we're wasting away.
Well, and he can only spend so much time with someone that he's clearly not in love with before he meets you.
Yeah,
so.
It's not working.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just like, how does that, what are the odds, you know? So, I mean, it's such a unique situation she was in.
The stars aligned perfectly. Yeah.
And people who knew Yolanda also said that she had a shrine of Selena in her home, which included a cardboard cutout of Selena draped with backstage passes of her shows.
Hmm.
And I wonder if Selena just never went to her house and never saw that, because I feel like if you saw that, you'd be like, the fuck, this is weird.
Although we did grow up with an uncle who had a cardboard cutout of Dolly Parton in his living room.
Hmm, that's true. We had a lot of cardboard cutouts, actually. But he didn't personally know Dolly Parton.
It's true.
You know, so it's like, that would be like if, you know, you came over and I had a cardboard cutout of you. And you'd be like, I mean, we're fucking friends. Like, what the fuck? Just hang out with me.
Yeah, that is true.
It's weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. It also reminds me of Slackers when he's like, I didn't make this hair doll. It fell out of your hair that way. Like... Like 23 little kitties. So Yolanda's making hair dolls.
Yes.
And it's getting real creepy. But Selena doesn't. She's like, you know what? She's a good person. I love her. Like when people came to Selena with anything about Yolanda, she was like, she's my friend. She wouldn't do that. NPH wouldn't do that. Like that's what she said. So in 94, she opened two clothing and jewelry boutiques, Selena, etc. And she had her own fashion line and she named Yolanda the general manager of those two stores. And Yolanda did not have any background in business whatsoever, but she was just like, you've done so well with the fan club. I mean, that's kind of a business in and of itself. Like you're growing a membership. So she felt like you can do this. Like I trust you. She was basically her right-hand woman. Like she had built so much trust with Yolanda that she gave her every access to everything. She trusted her with everything, with the money, all of the money. Yolanda had access to every bank account.
And she could sign checks. She could do...
Yeah, I've make know payments.
Of people who, even accountants that work for businesses, they have access to the checks, but they have to have somebody else sign them. Like yeah. Yolanda signed a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why you always have to have checks and balances. Even if it's somebody that... I mean, even when like I work with somebody, you know,
I'm like, there's certain things that I will say, I'm not going to take that over, or I'm not going to be the only one, you know, managing that or whatever, like, because I don't want that liability. Like, I want you to sign the checks.
For sure.
Yeah. Because I don't want to, I don't ever want there to be a question. There's not going to be a question, but I don't want there to be a question.
You just need everybody to be held accountable.
Yeah. It's just always important to have the checks and balances. And on top of that, I mean, if you completely trust one person with everything, that one person can fuck you over pretty hardcore. Mm-hmm. So, and she did it slowly. She did it with small things. I mean, that's how like credit card fraud usually starts out. They'll make like a $1 charge and wait and like see if you notice it. And then they'll make like a $3 charge.
It's the long con.
Yeah, for sure. So she was named as the general manager, and Selena had a clothing designer named Martin Gomez who like designed all of her clothing. So Yolanda was basically the line of contact with Martin. And he wanted to talk to Selena about things, obviously, because he's like, this is her clothing line and I need to discuss things with her. I want her to approve or tell me, you know, what revision she needs or whatever that is. And Yolanda would not allow him to speak to her. Like, she stayed on top of it and she had everything go completely through her. And he said that he was afraid of Yolanda and he ended up resigning from being her designer because he couldn't deal with Yolanda. He said she was mean, she was manipulative, she was possessive of Selena, and it freaked him out. And she was just so hateful that he didn't want to deal with it anymore. And the clothing, like the boutique, started to suffer because they didn't have enough employees because Yolanda was either firing anybody she didn't like, she'd just get rid of them, or people were quitting because they couldn't deal with her. And a lot of the employees did bring it up to Selena, and she was just like, I don't believe that Yolanda would do anything purposely to jeopardize the success of this venture.
I feel like this goes back to what we talked about with the abducted in plain sight. Like, this is grooming though.
Yes.
Because she's isolating Selena.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think another part of that too is Yolanda knew. So at this point, obviously, she knows she's doing something that if Selena found out she was doing, she's going to probably lose everything. So if
she's getting frantic and very...
Yeah. And if she's the only point of contact, if she's the only way, like the one road in and out, basically, then she knows exactly what information Selena's getting. So if somebody starts to say, hey, the bank account doesn't look exactly right, she's got the heads up to go in and do whatever it is that she needs to do, or to go ahead and tell Selena, you know, whatever it is that she wants her to hear. I think she was...
She can cut him off at the pass.
Yeah, I think she was controlling information too, because she didn't want Selena to... She didn't want to be blindsided if Selena knew something she didn't want her to know or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a big part of it too. But you're absolutely right. It is grooming because she had built so much trust that it was like Selena needed to see the proof when all of this came out. And like with the employees thing, I don't think that she thought all of her employees were lying necessarily, but I think that she didn't think Yolanda would do something nefarious to her.
Good word.
Or to her business. Like, mm-hmm. You know, maybe she's just being too strong. Maybe I need to, you know, talk to her about maybe, you know, just being nicer, how people are taking her or whatever. But I don't think that she thought...
It's a misunderstanding.
Yeah, exactly. She just didn't think it was anything that, you know, Yolanda would do on purpose. But Yolanda was, I think, anybody she saw as a threat, she tried to get rid of. And she definitely tried to isolate Selena from Abraham. Mm-hmm. Because that was a challenge for her. And she couldn't... Abraham's a strong person.
Yeah, he's a stone wall.
Yeah, like that he's she could not going to back down. So, and he's obviously the one who's, you know, going to look into stuff more or whatever. Because Selena's just like, I trust that everything's getting done the way it's supposed to get done. She's not going to go behind you and check you. So I mean,
she's
after...
She's only 23, you know?
Yeah, she's super young. So after employees started complaining about things, then when they didn't feel like they were getting anywhere with Selena, they started calling Abraham and they're like, hey, this is what's going on and we don't like it and we're having trouble and we can't keep employees and we don't want to stay either.
So he started warning Selena about it. And she's like, I think they're just, you know, same thing, misunderstanding, whatever. So then he starts getting calls from people in the fan club. And they're saying, hey, we paid our money. And I didn't get the shirt I was supposed to get. I didn't get the cassette I was supposed to get. I didn't get the whatever.
The stickers, the whatever.
Yeah. So he starts looking into the records and he's like combing through. And he starts finding all these checks that were written to Yolanda. It was like, by the people, for the people, like, you know, written to Yolanda, signed by Yolanda, and deposited by Yolanda. Like, everything was
but coming out Yolanda. Of Selena y Los Dinos.
Yeah, coming out of that account, but either going to cash or going to Yolanda, but it was all her handwriting, and it was all her signatures on them. So even if it was made to cash, she signed it on the back. So, and these were, there were lots of checks, and they're like, $1,600 at a time. Like, some of them were small, but some of them were thousands of dollars. So,
and like you said, I'm sure they started out very small.
Exactly.
But then she got like, bolder and bolder and bolder.
Exactly. Because she, the longer you do something little like that, I think it's like, okay, nobody's checking me. Because I feel like that's what serial killers say too, is like,
for sure.
Because they start getting sloppier because they're like, nobody's even gonna, nobody's paying attention. Nobody's gonna fucking catch me. So yeah, she started getting bolder. And the reports I read range from 30,000 to 60,000 that she embezzled. But either way, it's a lot of fucking money. Mm-hmm. And it's between her music income and her fashion line income. Sure. So yeah. She's got a couple streams. And she's embezzling shit from the fan club. So she's just not delivering stuff. And I don't know if in her mind she's like, well, if I take the money but I don't give the stuff, then it's like it never happened. But those people came back and complained about it. So yeah. It's like, I don't know if she thought they wouldn't notice if she just wasn't giving them the goods, you know?
But they're the ones that are going to notice that they're not getting.
Yeah, they're like, excuse me, I remember though that I sent you a check. So, and Abraham was like, you know, that's her reputation on the line too, because if you have a fan club and you're taking people's money and you're not giving them what you promise, her reputation's getting tarnished. So we have to cut that off. So when he brought all that to Selena, she's like, I need to see the proof because I don't believe that Yolanda would do something like that to me. She is a friend and she's a good friend. Like,
she was a ride or die with Yolanda.
Yeah. Like, she was like, she wouldn't do that to me. So he showed her the checks and the documents and everything. And she was like, oh my God, this is really happening. So Abraham and Selena confronted Yolanda. So this is March 9th, 1995. And they sit her down and they're like, here is everything that we have. What do you have to say for yourself? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, it was so frustrating because I knew she was lying to us, obviously. Like, I'm saying, Yolanda, this is your handwriting and you're writing yourself checks. And she's just like, no, I'm not. No, I didn't. I didn't do any of that. I haven't stolen any money from you. And he's like, the proof is right there. And she's just blatantly, I mean, that's a sociopath. Like, she doesn't care if she's confronted with it. She doesn't.
And she like believes her own truth.
Yeah. She's just like, it's not embarrassing to her. It's not upsetting to her. She doesn't care that somebody who she's supposed to respect and she thinks has respect for her, like, she doesn't care what that person's going to think of her after this comes out. Like, she's just like, no, I didn't. Whatever. So they're like, well, obviously you're fired. And Abraham told her that he was going to call the police. And he was like, we're going to prosecute you for this. This is a lot of money. Like, at that time, I don't even think they realized how much money it was. He just knew that there was money missing. So she skipped town. She left. And she took a lot of like legal and financial like documents with her, bank statements, all this kind of stuff. And of course, this is the time where you can't just go online and reprint that shit out. So they need these documents.
She had like the hard copies.
Yeah, she had everything. So she had left town. She ended up calling Selena and she's like, listen, I have all these documents. I will give them back to you, but I want to meet with you in person and I want to talk with you about stuff. And Selena's like, okay, fine. So Yolanda comes back to Corpus Christi on March 30th and she checks into the Days Inn. So that, and she checked in like late in the day, I think. So she calls Selena, says, okay, I'm here. I'm in room 158. So Chris was like, I'm going with you. So they drive to the Days Inn, and this is nighttime. And so he said he parked his truck right in front of the room so he could see in, like he wanted to be able to see everything. And she was like, I'll go in by myself. Everything's okay. But he was there if something happened. And of course, I don't think anybody even, it was not in the realm of possibility that she was going to attack her in any way. They just wanted to be sure that it like didn't get heated, I guess, or whatever. So Chris, you know, could see everything that was going on. He said he felt like they talked for a little too long, but Selena came back out. She had the folder with her. She gets in the truck. She's looking everything over and she's like, not everything is in here. And he was like, well, you know what? We're just not going to worry about it. Like, you're not going back in tonight. We're not going back in tonight. Like, it's late. Let's go home. Let's just deal with what we've got. So they went back home and he thought, this is, you know, that's over. That's it. And the next morning, Selena gets up, she gets dressed, and he said she left the house like around 9 o'clock that morning. And she had errands to run, like a bunch of stuff to do that day. He didn't ask her specifically where she was going. She just said, I'll be back later. And he's like, okay. So, and of course, he's like, I wish I'd asked her where she was going, because if I knew that she was going to go back there, I would have said, I'm going to go with you or let me go for you. And she had other stuff to do that day because she left the house around 9, but she didn't get to the Days Inn until more midday, like 11, 1130-ish. So she gets back to the Days Inn and she knocks on the door of 158 and she goes in the room. And what happens next is known only to Yolanda Saldivar, because obviously, Selena's not here to tell us, and Yolanda is batshit crazy. So she's the only one that really knows what happened next. But what we do know is that Selena was shot in the back by a .38 caliber revolver, and the hollow point bullet that she used exited through her chest. So the bullet severed her subclavian artery, which is just below the clavicle or your collarbone. And the doctor said, when they did the autopsy, they said literally if that bullet had hit her just 1 millimeter in any other direction, 1 millimeter, she'd probably have lived.
Oh my gosh.
Because it wouldn't have nicked that artery.
But that's what hollow point bullets do though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously she chose the perfect bullet to get the most damage that she could have done.
Yeah, exactly. So after she's shot, she begins screaming and she runs out of the hotel room. She's screaming for help. And she left a 392-foot long trail of blood and she ran over 130 yards to get help. So she ran a long way while just pumping blood out. Like, I cannot believe she made it as far as she did, losing as much blood as she was in that fast.
Just adrenaline and...
Yeah. Witnesses said that Yolanda still had the gun raised. So after she shot Selena, because the door was open when she shot her, and she said, they said that, you know, they hear the screaming, they heard the gunshot. And so they're looking in the direction that it came from. They see Selena run out of the room and then they see Yolanda come behind her and she's still got the gun raised and pointed. And she says, bitch. And then she walks back in the room and I guess to get like her keys or purse or whatever. And then she gets in her truck and starts driving around the parking lot looking for Selena. So, and of course she says she was looking for Selena to help her.
But in the 2020 interview that we watched, she said that she didn't even know if Selena was even hit.
Yeah. She said she didn't know that she'd been hit. And the lady is like, well, what about the blood? And she's like,
I didn't see
the pictures I saw, it was just dots. Like I couldn't see it. And then they do show the pictures and
it splatters.
It's blood splatter. Like spatter.
Spatter?
Well, it's blood spatter.
But I said splatters.
Splattered all over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was everywhere. It was all over the ground. It was all over that door. Like you
there
could
was
clearly
no way to
see
miss
it.
Yes.
Yeah. There was a lot of blood. And there's no way that she didn't realize that Selena had gotten shot because she would have reacted to that force, that impact. You don't do that if you haven't gotten shot.
Mm-mm.
Like, and she was bleeding everywhere. I mean, the people in the lobby said that by the time she made it to the lobby, like literally from her chest all the way down to her shoes, she was completely covered. Her clothes were like soaked through in blood. So there was a lot of blood. So Selena ran into the lobby where the manager called 911, and witnesses said that she was screaming, "Lock the door, she'll shoot me again." I mean, she was terrified. She was running for her life. She really thought that Yolanda was gonna shoot her again. Now, when we talk about Yolanda's defense, and she's gonna say it was an accident, why would Selena be saying something like, "She'll shoot me again"? If it went off in an accident and there was no altercation leading up to this, then maybe she would have been stunned that she was shot. But I don't think she would be saying, like, "Lock the door, she's going to come get me." You know?
Frantically trying to get away from her.
And she knew that she was following her, which she was. She went out to her truck and was driving around looking for her. What was the point of that?
Yeah.
So
what about like her with witnesses said that they saw her at the door still with the gun raised, said, "Bitch," like, why would you say that?
Yeah. If you didn't mean to shoot her, you're not going to be doing that. And you're certainly not going to still have the gun raised. So the manager is like trying to help her. You know, they've called 911 and the ambulance got there really, really quickly. And the police got there really quickly too. But he kept telling her, like, "Don't close your eyes. Don't go to sleep." Because he said she was like her breathing started to get slower. Her speech started to get a lot slower. And she started looking like she was going to like, she was kind of drifting in and out. And he kept telling her not to fall asleep. And he kept telling her she was going to be okay. And he said the last words she said were "Yolanda 158. So she wanted to tell them who had done this to her. And he said her eyes kind of like rolled back in her head. And he knew then that she wasn't going to make it. The ambulance took her to the hospital, Memorial Medical Center. And Dr. Lewis Elkins, the cardiac surgeon, was prepping her for surgery 32 minutes after she'd been shot. So this is all happening really quickly. But he said that the subclavian artery had been split into two. And by the time he got to her, her heart was blue. It had been completely pumped dry. There was no blood at all. And he said the ER doctor, when she first arrived at the hospital, was able to get an erratic heartbeat, but it wasn't enough. There were no signs of neurological function anymore. She was clinically brain dead. Her brain had been starved of blood flow for a really long time. So like by the time they got to her, you know, 30 minutes later or whatever, I mean, she bled out before she got to the hospital, pretty much. There was nothing left. It happened really, really quickly. So the ER doctor said that, or Dr. Elkin said the ER doctor was actually manually massaging her heart when he got to her just to try to keep it pumping. But again, she was already brain dead at that point. But due to the massive blood loss, the ER doctors had also given her a blood transfusion, and they pumped 3 liters of blood into her body to try to save her life. And her father protested that treatment because they were Jehovah's Witness and they didn't believe in blood transfusion medical treatment.
I feel like I've heard that, but I don't remember knowing that information.
And the doctors just did it anyway. They were like,
if it can save her life.
Yeah, sorry. We're going to do it anyway. Dr. Elkin said the hollow point bullet had shredded her right shoulder, her right lung, veins, and then split that artery. So that created a massive and ongoing blood loss, which caused her to bleed out in just minutes. Yolanda then barricaded herself in her truck and she had a 9.5 hour standoff with police. She most of the time was holding the gun to her head, threatening suicide, which I'm like, bye,
yeah,
whatever.
Prove it, bitch.
Yeah. And they had to bring in a negotiator to try to get her out of the truck safely. But they were also worried that she was going to, what they were worried about, two things, that she was going to hurt other people because a large crowd had gathered at that point. Like a lot of people had heard about what happened. The media, of course, immediately let it leak that it was Selena because you got to be first and whatever, which I think is fucked up because I don't even know if the family had been notified yet. But of course, the media is putting it out there. But
well, same way with her marriage. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know. But on top of that, they were worried that she would kill herself And they didn't, I mean, she's in the truck, so she's got her radio on. And they, what they didn't want to have happen was for her to find out that Selena was dead. Because at the point that Yolanda last saw her, she was running. And so she was alive. So they thought, if she finds out that Selena has died, that could flip a switch in her brain and she could go batshit crazier and decide to like shoot off rounds into the crowd.
Right. I have nothing to lose.
Exactly. I have nothing to lose. Or just go ahead and kill herself. So he didn't want her to find that out. But they did end up running a phone out to her because it's 95. So she doesn't have a cell phone. And like a negotiation phone. And we've got some audio from that. It's hard to understand what she's saying because she's hysterical and she's crying. But we'll talk a little bit about it after we play it, but I think it's pretty interesting to hear.
Did I tell you on the radio that I killed her?
No, I don't know anything about that.
Larry, I don't wanna live to this embarrassment, Larry.
Criticism of the worst of the world.
That the rest of my life will be torture because I won't be able to live in peace and harmony with myself. I'll never forgive myself.
So what I found really striking about that was how she was just so worried about what her life was going to be like after this. Like, oh, I'm going to have to live with this embarrassment and people criticizing me and people hating me and all this stuff.
I mean, I can never live in peace.
Yeah, a couple of times she said like what I've done to my best friend and all that. But I'm just like, of course you're worried about how this is going to affect you. Like,
right.
Just pissed me off. Because she did find out that Selena was dead. She heard it on the radio. They weren't able to stop the media because it's
the media. The media's a machine. Yes. Yeah.
So she was arrested and charged with first degree murder. And she went on trial in October of 95. Opening statements by the defense accused Selena's father, Abraham Quintanilla, of being controlling, trying to end Yolanda and Selena's friendship. Because he was losing control of his daughter. So her attorney said, the evidence will show that Abraham Quintanilla started efforts to split up this relationship. He accused Yolanda Saldivar of being a lesbian, which is not true. Yolanda was a challenge to the control Abraham Quintanilla had over Selena. Douglas Tinker was her attorney, and that was part of his opening statement. So,
okay.
Yeah. So 2 days after being confronted about embezzling, and again, the reports vary, $30,000 to $60,000 by Selena and Abraham, Yolanda applied to purchase a gun. So according to the testimony of the employees at the gun store, she claimed she needed the gun for protection from relatives of mentally ill people whom she worked for that were threatening to kill her. On March 11th, 1995, she visited a place to shoot, which is the gun store, I guess, in San Antonio, where she applied to purchase the gun. They did a background check on her. She didn't have any criminal history. So she was permitted to purchase the .38 caliber revolver on March the 13th. She actually ended up, after she purchased it, returning the gun to the store a couple days later. But then she came back on March the 26th and she repurchased the weapon, saying she had changed her mind. So now we're 5 days before she would fatally shoot Selena. She picks the gun up. So she says she purchased the gun because she wanted to kill herself. But she told them she was using it for protection from mentally ill people who are relatives of somebody she works for. And I mean, none of it adds up.
No.
Yeah. And
because if the story that you're telling is true, you don't have to make up multiple versions of that story.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And if you know, I mean, a huge cause of like shootings is losing a job. It usually affects men more than women, but you hear about that where like somebody got fired from somewhere and then they return back to that place or whatever a couple days later and shoot the place up. Mm-hmm. Like, if you know that you're going to meet, and that's what the forensic psychologist said, if you know you're going to meet somebody and there's going to be discussion about potentially losing a job, what's your purpose for bringing a gun?
Exactly.
It's because you're planning something violent. Either you're going to kill yourself or you're going to kill somebody else, but you're looking to hurt somebody mm-hmm. in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So she also decided to purchase hollow point bullets, which cause more damage to the surrounding tissue because they expand once they hit their target. So again, I'm not really sure why you would buy that unless you're intending to do significant damage to whoever it is. If she's planning to kill herself, which I don't think she was, because I think she would have fucking done it.
She had ample opportunity.
Yeah. 9.5 hours with a gun to her head. She never did it. But I think she wanted to hurt somebody. So...
And are we going to talk about in the 2020 interview why, when she was asked by her interviewer why she didn't kill herself in the 9.5 hours that she was being... Or held herself hostage?
Oh, yeah. What'd she say?
She was like... I heard Selena in her voice and she said, don't do it. You need to stay behind because if you kill yourself, you'll never meet me in heaven.
Yeah, I won't get to see you in heaven. Like, I vomited
mm-hmm.
violently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awful. So Yolanda was convicted after just two hours of deliberation. It did not take them very long.
No.
They did not buy her accidental shooting story because at first... You know, when she's in the car barricading herself in and whatever, she's like, the gun went off accidentally. I was telling her, Selena, go, I'm going to kill myself. And it just went off and it hit her. I didn't mean to hit her. And she's like crying. And then when she got to the police station, she confessed fully. She's the one that told them that, like, when Selena went in the room, they started talking, they started arguing. Selena said, you know, we're not going to be friends anymore. When she learned that she was not going to have any relationship with Selena anymore, that's when she snapped. Like, she already knew that she'd been fired. But when Selena said, this is it, it's over, we're not going to be friends anymore, she said that she pulled the gun out and she pointed it at her and she shot her. And Selena was trying to leave. Like, she was trying to walk out. She had her back to her and the door was open. So then later she said that, you know, again, she went back to the accidental shooting, but this time she's saying that, well, we'll play it. But anyway, so she was convicted of first degree murder. She was sentenced to life in prison and she won't be eligible for parole until March 30th, 2025. George W. Bush declared Selena's birthday, April 16th, as Selena Day in Texas. And he said that she represented the essence of South Texas culture.
I just think it's so funny. We kind of discussed this earlier and, like, I mean, no offense to George W., but I can hear him and his little ridiculous voice and he's like, Selena's amazing and also taquitos. Like, he's just so ridiculous. He's an easy target, you know.
Selena's Quintilla is probably
and I like burritos.
Yeah, exactly. So Tori jumped the gun on this a little bit, but in an interview on 2020 and late 95, forensic psychologist Dr. Malloy analyzed Yolanda's responses and her version of events. So when the interviewer asked her, if you could go back to March 31st, what would you do differently? Would you do anything differently? And she says, I wish Selena would have killed me. And he's like, well, that's weird. Like, because what's odd is she didn't say anything like, I just wish this had never happened. I wish I hadn't brought the gun with me. I wish we were both safe and everything had, you know, worked out differently or whatever. But he says that tells him that some violent act was premeditated, whether it was homicide or suicide. She knew that somebody was getting hurt or killed that day. And he said that usually when somebody's suicidal like that, that homicidal flips in and out. So it's such a high, intense emotion. And it's all happening so quickly that it's like, do I want to kill myself or want to kill you? Do I want to kill myself? Like, she's going back and forth with where her aggression is
pointed.
Sure.
So
directed.
Yeah. So, and it happens so fast that one of them just happens. I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I'm not a psychologist, obviously, but I think she wanted to hurt Selena. And I think that she purposely left some of those documents out because Chris was with her and she knew she needed to get Selena there alone because she wanted to either get her job back or she, and if it didn't go that way, she was going to pop off.
Yeah, basically. She was prepared to hurt her.
Yeah. She also says that she has this big secret that she's keeping and it's between her and Selena and nobody else knows it. And she can't divulge it right now because her case is an appeal, but you know, one day everybody's going to know this big secret. And he says that she, what she's doing there is she is establishing this special and exclusive relationship still with Selena. I'm the only person that knows the secret. It's something between Selena and me. And only I know it. Nobody else knows it. And, you know, I bet you wish you were close enough with her that you knew it and whatever. But it just, it gives her that link with Selena. And being the person that killed her gives her a special link with her too. Because now Selena's name is associated with Yolanda's name. She's always going to be associated with her. And she was so obsessed with her. It's like, if I can't have her, nobody can. And so now she's got that link with her and they'll always be associated together in such a sick way, which is what she wanted.
Yes.
She also said in that interview that she's like, Selena would call me mom. She'd be like, hey mom, how you doing? Hey mom. And you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, no, the fuck she did not. Like, and Marcella, I'm certain, did not appreciate that.
No.
Like, there's absolutely no way Selena called her mom. But we do have the audio from that 2020 interview in 95 where Yolanda gives her version of events.
She never told me that. I was telling her to leave. And I said, it's over, Selena. It's over. I can't work for you no more. Can't work for you no more. She went down. She grabbed my feet and told me not to leave her. And I picked her up and I told her, just leave. And I grabbed the gun, put it to my head. I pulled the thing back. And I said, if you don't leave, I'm going to do it, Selena. And she got up and she says, Mom, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about this. I'm going to close the door. And when she was walking to the door, she was going at an angle. And I told her, don't close the door. And in that instant, the gun went off. They have made me out to be a monster. And I just want to say, I did not kill Selena. It was an accident. And my conscience is clear.
I cannot deal with her being like, my conscience is clear.
No.
Like, how do you even say that and look somebody in the eye? And like the woman who's interviewing her, her eyebrow goes up ever so slightly. Like, I guess she's trying to like not have a big reaction to everything that she's
saying. She did a great job though.
She really did. She stayed pretty stone-faced. I could not have done that. Like when she, anything that she would have said, I would have like aggressive clapped in my responses to her and like leaned forward and been like, my eyebrows would have been off my forehead. There would have been no way.
Hovering like 2 feet above.
Yeah, exactly. Like, bitch, my eyebrows are gone. I do not understand how she did that. That was pretty insane. In June of 2002, a court reporter, Sandra Obal, I think, found the gun that had been used to kill Selena. So it had been entered into evidence, obviously, in the trial. But after the trial, all the evidence gets boxed up and the court reporter keeps it, which I did not realize.
I didn't either.
I learned that in that that thing on Netflix where it was like The Innocent Man or whatever, the John Grisham thing. So one of the victim's items of clothing they gave back to her mom, but the court reporter had it in her storage unit. I didn't know that they kept that stuff.
That's where it was, exactly. Yeah.
So she was, I guess, going through some of her old boxes or whatever and found the gun. And so she contacted the family and asked what they wanted to have done with it. And they wanted to have it destroyed. They wanted it like put through a machine and chucked into a billion pieces. So, because they felt like it would bring them some closure, like have that put away. A lot of people were wanting to pay a lot of money for that. There was some guy who was like, I'll pay $10,000 to a charity if you'll release that to a local museum. Because there is a statue of Selena in Corpus Christi, but I guess they wanted to have an exhibit of her in the museum, which I think you could totally do and would be a great thing to do.
With all of her outfits.
You don't need the gun. Yeah, you don't need the gun there. Like, why would you want to put the gun up that killed her? And that's what Abraham was saying. He's like, why would you want to save something that murdered somebody you supposedly love? Like
that's in a way celebrating that moment.
Yeah,
like, that's
exactly.
Not okay.
It's weird. So... And some guy in that area after it was destroyed was like, well, that's the same thing as just destroying a boatload of money. And they're like, it doesn't matter how much money, like, it's
why
ridiculous.
Are you looking at it that way?
Exactly. It's so weird. It's like, what about her life?
Like, I love the way that you say it. Like, some guy.
Fuck that guy. So the DA who prosecuted Yolanda, Carlos Valdez, filed the motion to have the gun destroyed, and Judge Jose Longoria agreed and he granted it. So in June of 2002, it was sawed into a bunch of little pieces and thrown into the bay. And as far as the Quintanilla family is concerned, I don't know why I couldn't remember that phrase.
I don't know.
That's right where it belongs.
Well, good. And I agree wholeheartedly. Yep.
So, and we're in 2019. So in 2025, she'll be eligible for parole. So get ready for that.
Yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah. And Abraham's still alive, 80 years old.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cause I got to thinking and I'm like, he may be dead.
Yeah.
But he's not. He's still kicking.
Good.
So, yeah.
I looked up after, cause I just recently, like the last month, watched the Selena movie, of course. And I cried my eyes out about it. Couldn't help it.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, could not get a grip of myself. And then I looked up Suzette and Abraham, and they're both sweet angel babies. And Chris, of course. And
yeah,
it's just so sad.
Yeah, and Chris has a book. So if you want to know more about Selena's life, you could obviously watch the movie or read the book.
Yeah, but I think either way, contributing, just keeping her memory alive is really amazing. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And what she did for, like, her genre of music and how many accomplishments she had as young as she was. But I mean, also being a woman in an industry that was so male driven, and she was turned down for gigs and all kinds of, like, some venues wouldn't let her book because she was a woman. They didn't want a female singing Tejano music. So I think it's pretty amazing what she did. She pushed forward.
Yes.
A pioneer.
I would agree. And a pioneer wearing a badass bustier.
Hell yeah.
I'm here for it.
Absolutely. Great buns she had. Mm-hmm. Also.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for listening.
Love you.
Love you so much.
Hope you enjoyed this one, this episode. And we'll catch you next month for your exclusive episode.
That's the word. That's it. All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, you guys. And shout out time.
Yippee! Yay. We love you guys. These are some of our patrons at the $10 level or higher. So if you are jonesing for us to fuck your name right up, then, you know, join over there at patreon.com/killerqueenspod.
Yay.
We want to give a hey girl thanks to Amber Struther,
Kayla Ditto,
Molly Martin,
Sarah Erickson,
Jody Clow,
Lauren Power,
Mallory Pearson,
Aaron Harbin,
Mindy Cates,
Laurie Davies,
Nina,
Nikki Wire,
Kaylee Brusky,
Mariah Vinson,
Rachel Hoban,
Malia Robinson,
Elizabeth Horstman,
Catherine Long,
Krista,
Reagan Smith,
Samantha Iverson,
Mandy Marco,
Miranda,
Victoria St. Jean, or St. John, maybe?
Oh, I like this one. This one says Ash Hole.
Looks
like Ashley Rolson via the email, but Ash Hole, that's clever, girl.
Love it. Alyssa Riley,
Chloe Gavin,
Aubrey Petrie,
Amy Donilow,
Courtney Rizzo,
Malika Smiley,
Courtney Lovelette,
Charisse Jardinsky,
Courtney Oberer,
Julia Tramazzo,
KB Kinlaw,
Heim.
Gosh.
I'm getting like progressively more unsure. Okay, Tyne Bo. My Cajun part of me wants to say Baudouin or something.
Yeah.
Baudouin?
I don't know.
I'm so sorry.
Gigi Arcadia.
Megan. Oh my gosh. I am struggling here. Megan Parzite.
Ashley Lewis.
Rachel Sherman.
Melinda Goff.
Melissa Moore.
And Leonza Ussery.
Whew. All right, you guys.
Charles sweating. Sweating.
Our deepest apologies. Condolences.
Yes, okay? We're so sorry.
But we love you.
Yes, we do.
And we only fuck up your name.
Because we love you.
Because we love you. Exactly. Thank you guys so, so much.
We love you. Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.